Good morning, everyone. We'll call this meeting to order. Please have roll call.
Representative Bartel.
Here.
Senator Lang.
Excused.
Representative Cheetah.
Here.
Senator Carey.
Excused.
Representative Rickey.
Here.
Senator Flowers.
Here.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Excused.
Thank you. Just a couple announcements. We ended up getting the governor's budget. That's in the buff pages. I believe that you can get them online, Senator Flowers, and then everybody in attendance here, I believe that was handed out. So it'll be the budget for military affairs, yes. And we'll just go ahead and get right on into the hearing. So good morning, Ms. Wilkinson. Would you like to walk us through the Department of Military Affairs?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
On the agency overview, yes.
Committee, Chris Wilkinson with the Fiscal Division. I'm going to share my screen with you. Mr. Chairman, you should now see the Legislative Fiscal Division website with the heading Department of Military Affairs. That's
yes.
Coming up on your screen. This is the organizational chart for the Department of Military Affairs. It shows you the various divisions under the umbrella of the Department of Military Affairs. It gives you the individuals in charge of each of those, and then the total FTE for the entire division, the entire agency, each division, and the amount of general fund and total funds. This again is the historical overview of spending and resources between 2002 and projected through 2021. This first chart shows you that the Department of Military Affairs is primarily
Military Affairs is on A341.
That is the green on this chart that you see. General fund is used to match a lot of this funding, and that is the yellow amount. And then there is a small amount of state special revenue. You should also see here the comparison between the inflation adjusted for population and growth in the economy from as measured by personal income. And you see that there are some peaks and valleys, as there are with most agencies. We have explanations as to what those are. The first peak here is due to federal emergency management agency funds. That this agency also receives a fair amount of construction funds for armories and various other military construction projects. And then they quite often are the agency that responds to federal disasters and emergencies in the state. One of those it would be wildfires. Here, then, near the bottom of this, you see another chart showing general fund, which is in yellow. It barely moves up and down. And then state special revenue growth, which is going up and down here. In part, the state special revenue is growing because of fire suppression funds in 2018. That's your large, and then a blip, and then the Army National Guard program spent about 1.6 in statutory authority for a land purchase at that time. Here again, you see the deep dive. So here is a picture of the agency in fiscal year 2020. You see that there is a large amount of fund, and this is from all funding sources. You see that personal services are about a quarter of everything. Operating expenses, 34%. Grants out to other local governments for disaster and emergency services, and then transfers out. By source of authority, House Bill 2 is the majority of the authority in this agency. There's some amounts that have been transferred, the appropriation transfer, that is money received from other agencies. And then you see there are some additional statutory appropriations and long-range building. And finally, the fund type. Once again, you can see pictographically that it's mostly federal funds here. General fund, about 12% for the agency total from all funding sources is used to match federal dollars. There is some interesting information out on the website for the State Administration and Veterans Affairs. They had some committee proposals for some bills that you might want to look at. And then that brings us to the LFD budget analysis, the workbook. Mr. Chairman, I was going to just go over the summary first and then let the agency speak. And then I thought we could go program by program if that's acceptable.
Yes, thank you.
So the summary, it shows that they've requested about $5 million when compared to the fiscal year 2021 biennium. And you have a number of action items for your consideration in this budget. I will be going over those items individually. The comparison here, it shows that they only spent about $44.5 million out of the $51.6 million that they received. And there are a number of reasons for that. It will be explained in each of the divisions, but one of the main reasons for lower spending in personal services is turnover and vacancies. And then also you have some lower spending in operating expenses. And there's a discussion that I'm going to bring up as we go through this about levels of spending and budgets. There's some considerations for you there. On page A, 344 of your workbooks, this is the changes that were made between the legislative budget that was provided and the executive base budget. The legislative action includes two additional bills that the legislature intended to be added to the base budget. Both of those impacted the Veterans Affairs program. You see that program 31 at the bottom of your page. One was for grants to veterans that have earned a Purple Heart or a higher award, scholarships. And the other was transfers out to counties that provided veteran services. And so I would be discussing those further. But those are the two changes in that first column. And then you see that there's one modification to the budget. The challenge program reduced personal services by $267,000 and added to operating by that exact same amount. Now, as some of you may remember from last biennium, when an agency does this, it increases their base budget because they've increased the budget for the operating expenses. As you can see here, it was 1.2, it's now 1.5 million. And then because of the process that we use to establish the costs of personal services, there is a picture taken of the personal services at the beginning of July of 2021. That takes a picture of the salaries of all the personal of all of the employees that are included in the budget. And because the agency did not reduce the FTE associated with the positions, they have increased their personal services budget by another $267,000 at a minimum. And so we do want to point that out to you. There is an issue in that particular program, but I wanted to show it to you here where the picture actually is, Mr. Chairman. From there, I'm going to have you go to page A346. This shows you the personal services budget, present law, DP1 for by each division. And there's two things I wanted to point out here. One, again, you see that 267 went back into the personal services budget on the second line for the challenge program in figure two on 346. That increases the statewide present law adjustment to $286,000, where it would have been, just about 20,000 or so, or even less than that. Excuse me, about 17,000. The other thing to point out is if you look at the Air National Guard program on that figure, you see that the expected changes, there is a large reduction of about $500,000. The Air National Guard program provides firefighter services in the Great Falls Airport. Those individuals serve 24-hour shifts. And so they have large amounts of overtime. That comes back out of the personal services budget as part of the determination of the amount that they're going to request for the next period. And so you see a large reduction for program 13. When we get to that agency discussion for that division, you will see that they are requesting then that funding back. And so I wanted to point that out to you in figure two. From there, you see the funding table. There's no one-time only requested in this period of time. And then there is statutory appropriations. On page 8, 347, one of the things that we look at as the analysts is the availability of funds that are just in fund balances sitting out there. And one of the comments I have for you in relation to the statutory appropriations funding is that this agency receives money from the governor's emergency fund when we have a natural disaster. That when reviewing the appropriations for those emergencies, there are two executive orders, one from 2011 for flooding and another in 2016 related to a storm, that still have a large amount of general fund sitting out there. There's 1.1 for the flood in 2011 and about 0.3 million in 2016. You may wish to discuss those executive orders with the agency to determine if they still require that general fund. And if not, their plans on reverting that funding back into the general fund. Mr. Chairman, in the budget analysis, the November the 15th, there was no language. When I go through at the end of the changes, there is a request for some language, and we can discuss that at the end of the presentation for today. That concludes my remarks in the summary, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm available for questions. And I will stop sharing my screen.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Ms. Wilkinson, on the reverting that emergency order money back, is that what been done already in Governor Gianforte's budget?
Mr. Chairman, that is not something that's handled in the budget specifically. That appropriation authority has already been provided to the agency, and it would be a process that the agency would need to follow if they no longer need those funds.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee for Ms. Wilkinson? Okay, thank you. We'll now hear from Adjutant General Roenick.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, did I miss you? Sorry, Senator Flowers.
I didn't get my little cursor over there fast enough. Oh. I'm sorry. Thank you for recognizing me. Mr. Chair, Ms. Wilkinson, I'm looking at agency materials online, and when I go to Department of Military Affairs, it says URL not found. So I can't access those materials.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers, when you go to the agency on our website and you're going to agency materials?
Yes, and I click on that, and then in Department of Military Affairs comes up as a header. I click on Department of Military Affairs and it says URL not found.
I will resend the link to you. Thank you, okay. Senator Flowers. We'll get that fixed for you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Senator Flowers, would it be okay that if we just go ahead and move forward with Major Roenick?
Mr. Chair, absolutely.
Okay.
I'll follow along on screen here.
Major Roenick.
Good morning, General Roenick. How do you hear? Hello.
We can hear you. Now we can't hear you.
Good morning. How do you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. the slides. We have a slide presentation deck. I don't know if we can get that to be shown.
I think I have to be the one to show this.
One second, real quick.
Can you hear? Why is this being? Oh, could you guys just take it? Now I can hear sounds. So, sir, if you're going to be on there, you'll just have to do page down as you're ready.
All right. with some help here, I think we're set. So you should see a slide deck, Department of Military Affairs, and hopefully hear me just fine. Again, good morning, Chairman Bartel and members of the Appropriations Subcommittee. I am Major General J. Peter Ronick, H-R-O-N-E-K. I am the Adjutant General for the Montana National Guard and the Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I'm here today in support of the Executive Budget for Military Affairs. Gotta get the slide to advance here for you. There you go. As both the Adjutant General and the Director of the Department of Military Affairs, I have two leadership roles as presented on the slide. Today, I'm in the role as Department Director. The agency administrators for the department, listed on the left side, will present their sections of the agency budget. The Department of Military Affairs has core values of leadership, teamwork, trust, service, and stewardship. These values form the foundation on which we serve the state of Montana. The Department of Military Affairs accomplishments have been many over the past biennium. In this slide, we highlight just a few. From efficiencies in procurement to pandemic responses, from elementary school STEM enrichment to cemetery services for our veterans, Military Affairs has achieved a wide range of goals on a conservative budget. In the next biennium, the Department of Military Affairs is requesting 8 full-time equivalents, additional operation and maintenance spending authority, additional spending authority for our firefighters, mitigation plans, and fixed costs. Again, my agency administrators will discuss further when they present. As a reminder for committee members that have reviewed our budget before and for the new members of the committee, the success of the programs within the Department of Military Affairs relies not only on our state general fund dollars, but in a large part from federal cost share dollars. Our programs run anywhere from 100% federal funds to 90% federal, 10% state for our Air Guard facilities, 75% federal, 25% state for the Montana Youth Challenge, and a 50-50 for our Army National Guard armories in our 19 communities across Montana. So any dollar in our state general fund could result in double, triple, or nearly a tenfold leverage of federal funds. Therefore, a loss of general fund can result in a loss of federal funds. I will leave it to the program administrators to highlight these in their budgets. Our agency presentation will follow the same structure as the executive budget. We will introduce the next person to the present as we finish our testimony. Subject to your questions, this concludes my testimony. I will now hand it over to Ms. Sunday West, Military Affairs Deputy Director.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Bartel and members of the Appropriations Subcommittee. Just checking everyone can hear me.
Yes.
I am the Department of Military Affairs Deputy Director and Administrator of the Director's Office, Sundy West, W-E-S-T. I'm here today in support of the Executive Budget for Military Affairs and to give an overview of the Director's Office. The Director's Office houses the administrative functions of military affairs, human resources, procurement, asset management, information technology, budget, and finance. This is similar to what I'm sure you're already familiar with other agencies. So I will highlight some areas that are unique for us. The Military Family Relief Fund and scholarship programs are administered in the Director's Office, which is a fancy way to say that we're the accountants and record keepers for those programs. We also pay for the state awards and medals for the soldiers and airmen of the Montana Guard. We pay for expenses associated with Montana's role in the Military Interstate Children's Compact Commission. The role that the Director's Office plays with the federal reimbursement is probably the most important to explain to the subcommittee. We simplify that function in the Director's Office by saying the state pays and the feds reimburse. The agreements that the Military Affairs has with the National Guard Bureau, FEMA, and similar grants requires that the state adhere to strict rules for reimbursement. Failure to follow those requirements could leave the state stuck with paying a bill that they relied on federal funds to reimburse. As an example, if laptops were purchased for $10,000, but it's not an allowed purchase, the feds will not reimburse and the state's stuck with a $10,000 bill. The Director's Office has various processes in place to reduce that risk to the state. And in the example I gave, during the purchasing request for laptops, the Director's Office would review for allowability in the agreement and catch the issue before the purchase is made. The executive budget submission for the Director's Office includes present law adjustments and reductions to general fund for state holiday share. This is a 1.2% reduction to general fund for the next biennium. As of yesterday, the expenditure rate for our fiscal year 21 budget is 53% of personal services and 49% of operational expenses. It is our hope that you will accept the executive budget for the Director's Office as submitted. Subject to your questions, this concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. West. Before we move on to another program, Ms. West, would you? We ask that the Military Affairs offers us up a hard copy of your presentation. We did not receive that, so I would like to, if you could provide that for the committee.
We can, but.
Mr. Chairman, that was my fault. They asked it if we wanted it provided electronically, and so we did provide that. They did provide that, and we provided that to you last week sometime.
Okay.
And it was my understanding if you wanted printed, you would take care of that yourselves. We can certainly print it for you if you'd like.
All right. I just missed it. Okay. Ms. Wilkinson, would you want to go ahead and just go over the Director's Office's
Mr. Chairman, I can certainly do that. I'm going to share my screen with you. We are on the Director's Office. You should see page A349. And actually, I want you to take a look at page A350. When you look at the actual expenditures for fiscal year 2020 compared to the budget for fiscal year 2020, you see that there is a budget of about $200,000 in the operating expenses, and they have spent about $117,000. One of the things that I looked at was what their spending was historically in operating expenses. And so you can see if you look at page A351, figure 3, and it shows you the operating expenditures from fiscal year 2014 through fiscal year 2020. You see that they total, with the exception of 2016, right around $100,000, more or less. And in the last 3 years, they have been right about there. The seven-year average is about $125,000, including those higher amounts in 2015 and 2016. So one of the things you may want to consider is whether or not the level of funding for operating expenses is necessary. In the 2021 biennium, the legislature did provide the agency with about $75,000 in additional authority that was above historic funding levels for operating. And as you can see, they have not utilized that, at least in the current fiscal year, 2020. So your options here are to reduce the operating expenses more in line with historic spending patterns, or to adopt the executive proposal as the agency is requesting, with a higher level of operating expenses. Mr. Chairman, that pretty much concludes my remarks. You see that they are not requesting, if you look on page A353, anything but statewide present law adjustments. So they are asking for personal services, changes to fixed costs, and inflation deflation, and that is the sum of the budget requests. Mr. Chairman, that would conclude my remarks unless you have any questions for me.
Any of the questions from the committee for Ms. West or Ms. Wilkinson on the director's office? If no questions, then we'll move on to the...
Mr. Chairman, did you want the
Angie,
budget office to...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed that, yes. Ms. Nelson, do you have any comments on either one of either the agency overview or the director's office program?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I don't have any comments on the director's office portion. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Wilkinson?
Muted.
Ms. Wilkinson, I think you're muted.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm going to get the challenge program up. It is the next program included in the budget analysis. And I will share my screen with you. So the Youth Challenge Program provides services, and the agency will be discussing that with you. I think you can probably see my screen. To youth 16 to 18 in the Dillon area, they attend a 17-month program there. So when we looked at the budget there, you see on the budget comparisons about $800,000 or almost 9% increase. Part of that increase, and I'm going to go down to page A355 in your workbooks, is related to additional operating expenses of $267,000. And then you see up here personal services go from a base budget of $3 million. To about $3.5 million. The majority of that is the result of the $267,000 that was added to the base budget. On page A356, you see that explanation of what happens when a budget authority is moved out of personal services and down into operating expenses without adjusting the FTE. You have some options in relation to this. You can reduce personal services funding and related FTE. You can reduce the operating expenses by about $267,000, which is the amount that they increased the base budget by. Or you can have a conversation with the Youth Challenge Program to understand the underlying requirements that they're going to need to have personal services to provide the services that they provide to the youth, and what those requirements are in terms of how many individuals they need. And then also what adjustments they may, why they needed the additional operating expenses, and if you should consider those at that higher level or not. Those are the options that we have outlined for you, Mr. Chairman. From here, you see that they are only requesting on 357 The adjustments in personal services, fixed costs and inflation, deflation. And again, you see that 285,000 in personal services. Of that, 267,000 is related to the movement of the funding down into the operating expenses. And finally, they are requesting a modified position become permanent. That would add one FTE. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks on this program.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Any questions from the committee? No questions, and we will hear from Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Ms. West, if you could put our slide up for me, please. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Trent Gibson, spelled G-I-B-S-O-N, director of the Montana Youth Challenge Academy. It's been my privilege and honor to work at the academy since its inception in 1999. Over the past two decades of operation, the academy has strategically evolved to meet the diverse needs of Montana's youth and the schools around the state who support them. If you got our next slide up, Sunday, please. Our mission is to assist at-risk youth in developing skills and abilities.
Mr. Gibson, we're not seeing.
I'm sorry, yep. Sunday, you're not sharing your screen.
Right.
I know, it's fighting me. It keeps telling me that the screen sharing has failed to start. The window you selected is invalid.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I can continue.
Yes, Mr. Gibson, go ahead.
Oh, there it is.
Okay, our mission is to assist at-risk youth in developing skills and abilities necessary to become productive citizens. We achieve it by engaging youth in physical, emotional, and educational development within a highly structured environment. MICA Class 44 began their journey yesterday with the start of a new acclimation phase. The Academy incorporates the best practices in youth development from a combination of educational and military models. Our staff leverages high quality and trusting relationships with program participants, their parents and guardians, and a vast network of MICA supporters to achieve our success. Challenge empowers our participants, who we call cadets, to embrace responsibility, achievement, and positive behavior. It instills self-confidence, fosters ambition, and creates opportunities through job skills and training and service to the community and leadership. Our vision is to be the preferred alternative education setting for promoting success of at-risk youth between the ages of 16 and 18 in the state of Montana. We will fulfill our vision by continuing to demonstrate our commitment to the youth we serve, their families, and our mastery of the quasi-military training model, a proven educational delivery method. The Montana National Guard established the Montana Youth Challenge Academy on the campus of the University of Montana Western as an intervention program to reclaim the lives of teens who had dropped out of school and who are not on track to graduate. The term at risk for our purposes refers to the risk of not graduating high school. We are all too well aware of the negative life outcomes that are associated with this risk: increased substance abuse, poverty, incarceration, and early death among them. It is because these stakes are so high that the Department of Defense has invested in the challenge model of youth development and community outreach. To date, the Academy has graduated over 3,300 cadets from across our entire state. In our four-year data analysis, we can validate that over 80% of Academy graduates are either employed, enlisted in the military, or in an educational setting. Applicants to the program must be voluntary, be between the ages of 16 and 18, and either dropped out of school or not satisfactory progressing. Montana's program is one of over 40 challenge programs nationwide. However, we are the only program to be located on a college campus. When the challenge began, we only offered cadets the option of learning and taking their GED. We continue to evolve along with the educational landscape. As of now, the Academy has an interlocal agreement with most high schools. We're helping cadets achieve high school diplomas through our state-aligned curriculum, which is delivered by Montana-certified teachers. Through our collaboration with the Office of Public Instruction and our partnerships with school districts, nearly 30% of recently graduating cadets are returning to their high schools, with nearly 80% of them achieving their diploma. As we continue to evolve our response to the needs of at-risk students, we are working with OPI to gain accreditation status. Once this is achieved, we expect the numbers of diplomas to increase along with the number of kids we serve. The timing is right for this partnership. Preliminary feedback from high schools around the state indicates that COVID-19 is causing more students to fall behind and drop out. Challenge is poised to support them and their home districts in achieving their educational completion and success. NYCA's partnership with the University of Montana Western has created opportunities for cadets to experience and participate in higher education. Cadets meeting academic requirements can take up to 6 college credits, and those preparing for military enlistment can participate in a 15-credit leadership program. Our location on campus not only allows cadets a firsthand look at higher education, it also allows for a pooling of state resources, with nearly $1 million annually being used by the Academy and passed through to UM Western in facilities, dining operations, and tuition for academic programs. The Academy operates in a cost-efficient manner while continuing to explore innovative opportunities to enhance academic achievement and increase placement opportunities for Montana's youth. Over the past 4 years, our enrollment has increased 36%. Based on the stress COVID has placed on the education system and feedback we're getting from schools and families, we anticipate our return to and potentially surpass our pre-COVID numbers. Because we are serving more youth, we anticipate our costs will increase. The Academy did shift spending authority from personnel to operations in the fourth quarter of last state fiscal year in order to internally address back-to-back classes that were well above average enrollment. We did not anticipate any effects being placed on the base budget. Due to the COVID, there was a 7-week suspension of operations in the spring, occurring with our inability to fill several cadre positions. Vacant cadre positions generally do not create vacancy savings due to overtime requirements to meet minimum manning. However, due to the suspension of operations, vacancy savings was indeed created. The Academy could not anticipate the length of the suspension or the inability to rehire during this suspension. We also could not anticipate the number of students who would re-enroll when class resumed. This resulted in operation costs not fully being executed. The cadre department, which delivers a quasi-military aspect of our model, comprises approximately half of the Academy staff. Cadre ensure cadet safety and cover operations 24/7. Challenge programs across the nation experience a significant rate in turnover. Here in Montana, our cadre turnover rate has been approximately 60% annually. That means 15 of 23 cadre per year. The skill and knowledge of the cadre department directly correlates to cadet retention rates, academic outcomes for cadets, and overall safe operations at the Academy. Our high turnover rate has also created significant operational changes, as we must conduct ongoing training in order to increase new employees' competence and confidence. Ongoing training is needed beyond the new hire training in order to increase cadre proficiency and reduce cadre attrition. Because the cadre staff turnover is a nationwide issue, the National Guard Bureau has created a dedicated training position in our manning model and has committed to providing the federal portion of the funding. Our budget proposal requests for a full-time training position with the associated state match. Cadre turnover creates a secondary budget challenge for the Academy. Due to the 24/7 nature of the Academy, minimum staffing must be achieved at all times. Even when we are down members of the cadre team, except for the unprecedented suspension of operations, that shift must be covered by another team member, and the cost is at time and a half. This means the Academy does not realize much of a vacancy savings that is associated with our turnover. The final fiscal note I want to make is due to the funding model and requirement for state match, any reduction in state funds is multiplied by a factor of 4 in our bottom line. I'm proud to proclaim that the Montana Youth Challenge Academy ranks among the best in the nation in our operations and outcomes. Our last National Guard Bureau inspection resulted in an excellent overall rating, placing Montana in the top tier of programs. The Academy operates in a cost-efficient manner that actually saves money for the state while providing critical educational and life skills to our youth. The RAND Corporation report found that for every dollar invested by government, it sees a return of $2.66, which is return of investment of 166%. The Academy has consistently demonstrated the ability to positively impact lives in every corner of our state. Thank you for supporting the Academy and continuing to investigate and hope. I'm happy to explain the Academy in more detail and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Any questions from the committee? Representative Rickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gibson, is there a cap on the amount, or is there a cap on the number of youth you accept?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rickey, yes, there is. It's based on two things. It's based on the funding that we have, and it's also based on the size of our facility here. This current class, we had to cap our enrollment to 110 to start the class due to the requirements for the school opening for us. Sadly, we had probably, I think last count was another 24 students who had applied that we could not enroll in the program.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Cheetah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gibson, 80% success is phenomenal. That's you guys are to be commended for that. I just had a thought, and I'm sure you as a group have already addressed this or discussed it, but what are some of the ideas that you're kicking around now to try to reach or bridge some of the remaining 20% who aren't attaining the goals that they have set for themselves when they enter the program and that you're hoping they will attain when they become part of the Youth Challenge?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cheetah, yes, sir, good question. It's honestly twofold. Part of it is our ability to put good cadre in front of them, good instructors in front of them, the time that they're here to increase what they learn. The second part is our outreach. We have a mentoring component to the program, and those folks train mentors from around the state and work with our youth as they go out into the state. Increasing our ability to be accredited with OPI is going to help us with this long-term, I believe, because it's going to allow more kids to get that high school diploma. Senate Bill 197, which was put forth last session and supported by your body, which I appreciate, is opening a lot of opportunities for kids. As we go into this session, we're getting phone calls weekly from other schools who are looking for these opportunities. So continuing to do outreach across the state has been a goal of ours strategically. We found that there's a lot of turnover, like in our cadre department, in the social services and the educational settings across the state. And we've put together a strategic plan to get out to all corners of the state on a consistent basis and make sure that everybody out there knows about the program.
Any other questions from the committee? No questions from the committee. Ms. Nelson, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have anything to add in addition to the comments, but I'm available for questions.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gibson. We'll now move on to the National Guard Scholarship Program. And Ms. Wilkinson will walk us through the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me? Hang on.
Yes.
You can't hear me? Okay. You should see on your screen page A359, and this is going to be a quick presentation. The National Guard Scholarship Program provides scholarship to veterans that returning to their educational goals. The program is funded with general fund, as you see there. It's about $414,000. Last biennium, they're asking for exactly the same amount as it was provided last time. On the bottom of that page, you see that in fiscal year 2020, they spent about $140,000 of that, leaving just about $60,000. That is a result of lower requests for the scholarships. Those are still available should they be needed. There's another $207,000 available should it be needed. Mr. Chairman, that would conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Questions from the committee? If not, we will hear from Brigadier General James Wilkins.
Good morning, Chairman Bartel and members of the Appropriations Subcommittee. I am Brigadier General James Wilkins, W-I-L-K-I-N-S. I'm the director of the Joint Staff for the Montana National Guard. I am here today in support of the executive budget for military affairs and to introduce the scholarship program to the subcommittee. The Montana National Guard Scholarship Program provides scholarships to eligible Montana National Guard personnel enrolled as undergraduate students in Montana colleges, universities, or training programs. The program assists Montana in recruiting and retaining personnel in both Army and Air National Guard and enhancing its operational readiness to assume both state and federal missions. Scholarships also reward Guard members for their service to the state by helping with their education costs at Montana post-secondary institutions. We hope the subcommittee will continue their support of the scholarship program by adopting the executive budget request of $414,724 for the next biennium. Subject to your questions, that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, General Wilkins. Any questions for the general? Representative Cheetah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General Wilkins, first of all, thank you for your service, as well as all those who are presenting today. We wouldn't be where we are today without you. You mentioned the term undergrad studies using these scholarships. Is there a particular reason why individuals who are interested in graduate programs are not allowed to access these scholarship dollars?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Cheetah, with that, sir, some programs are available, but the scholarship program is focused on undergraduate programs for, and you know, the focus here has been the guardsmen, both Air and Army, that are serving presently in the Guard. Most of those programs that they are undergraduate programs that they're pursuing those degrees in. So that's the focus.
Okay. Thank you, General Wilkins. Angie, do you have anything to offer from the budget office?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no further comments on this section.
Okay, then we'll move on to the Army National Guard program. Ms. Wilkinson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move on to the Starbase program on page A361, if that is all right.
Yes.
Thank you. The Starbase program is provide services to fifth graders, and it is provides further activities in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. You often hear that referred to as STEM. On that first page, you see the biennial comparison, and if you look at personal services, you see that there is a decrease there of about $106,000 or 21% reduction. I'm going to then move down to A362, which is just, there is a discussion on program personal services. When the budget was established for fiscal years 2020 and 2021, there was about $73,000 in unallocated personal services that was provided for an office manager financial specialist in the Great Falls site. There was not FTE added for that. And so the process that is used for personal services only takes a picture of the authorized FTE. As a result of that, the funding that was provided in the 21 biennium for that office manager financial specialist was not included in the 2023 biennium, and the agency is not requesting that additional funding as part of their budget requests. If you look on page A363 of your workbooks, you see that reduction in personal services in the statewide present law adjustment. It's about $55,000 in the first year and $54,000 in the second year. And Mr. Chairman, those are the only requests that the Starbase program has. That concludes my remarks on this agency, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions from the committee? Okay, Ms. Wilkinson.
Mr. Chairman, did you want the agency to discuss that?
I don't know who that is.
Hang on, we are getting them for you.
Thanks.
I apologize. I left that off your agenda.
It's okay.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Chairman Bartel, members of the subcommittee, or the committee, excuse me. For the record, my name is Wendy Fechter, spelled F as in Foxtrot, E-C-H-T-E-R. I am the administrator for the Montana Starbase program for the Department of Military Affairs and the director for the Starbase Great Falls site. I would like to provide a short overview of the program. Next slide, please. 80% of our nation's workforce will require STEM talent in the next decade. Starbase is a Department of Defense youth outreach program that addresses this need. The mission of Starbase is to provide a hands-on, innovative, and engaging classroom for elementary age, predominantly fifth grade students, that allows all children to experience learning success, teamwork, and real-world application of science, technology, engineering, and math, igniting interest in pursuing careers in STEM fields. The moment students enter the Starbase classroom, they are addressed as scientists and engineers. Starbase is a 100% federally funded program by the Department of Defense. The program brings an average of $750,000 to the state annually. To date, this five-day program located at two sites, Fort Harrison in Helena and the 120th Airlift Wing in Great Falls, has served over 20,000 students from 43 different schools in 17 communities. In addition, if we have open days or a class with a low student count in the schedule, we have private schools and homeschoolers participate as available. During the summer, our Starbase team offers week-long STEM summer camps to children of military families in Great Falls and Helena. In addition, our team has traveled off-site to host week-long summer camps at Rocky Boy, Wolf Point, Ronan, Browning, Hardin, and Great Falls to reach out to our Native American communities. This program brings three 100% federally funded state positions, two FTE, and one modified. An additional seven federally funded teaching positions that are contracted through the Helena and Great Falls school districts. Starbase is scheduled to offer 70 classes to approximately 1,500 Montana students during federal fiscal year 21. This number is a bit lower than most years due to COVID-19 and smaller class size. Subject to your questions, this concludes my testimony. Thank you kindly.
Thank you, Ms. Fechter. Any questions from the committee? If none, then we'll go ahead and move on. Ms. Wilkinson?
And members of the committee, we're on the Army National Guard program. That begins in your workbooks on page A365, and I will share my screen with you. On page A365, you see a summary of the changes between the two biennia. The division is requesting about $1.5 million more in funds. And if you look at the funding, you see the split between general fund and federal funds there. There's matching requirements for this particular division. And so they are requesting about $55,000 in general fund, and that will be matched in part with $1.5 million in federal funds. Part of the increases that you're seeing in the federal funds, you see up above in the personal services, there's an additional 1.5. A small portion of that is related to the statewide present law adjustment, but the other portion of it is related to a request for five new FTE. And if you look on page A367, you see a list of those additional FTE. There's a request for a natural resource officer, an environmental compliance specialist, ground maintenance, a construction manager, and contract oversight. These positions would be 100% federally funded and would add about $379,000 a year to the budget. From there, on that same page, A367, you see a discussion on how the funding is determined. for the various programs that are operated here. One of the main responsibilities of this particular program is to maintain and operate various facilities that are owned in part with the federal government. And you see there a breakdown of how that funding is done. I'm not going to go through that in detail, but it is available for you should you be so interested. And then finally, you see on page 8 through 68 the requests for statewide present law adjustments. And on 369, of the list of the exact amounts that they are requesting for the FTE, what that FTE responsibilities would be. And in addition, there is additional funding requested for operating and maintenance of facilities. Of those, there is only one facility that is requesting a share for that. And the rest of it, and excuse me, that explanation is down on page A370. There's one facility, it is the Malta Readiness Center that has a state share added to it for the operations and maintenance. That's about $30,000 of general fund each year. And the remainder of the facilities, there's seven that they're adding online, the maintenance for those, and that's about $94,000 in federal funds. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stop sharing my screen. That would might conclude my remarks on this program. And I'm available for questions, should you have any.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Any questions from the committee for Ms. Wilkinson? If not, then we'll move on to the agency presentation.
Good morning, Colonel this is Todd a radio Burl. Check. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Chairman Bartel and members of the Appropriations Subcommittee. I am Colonel Todd Verrill. That's V as in Victor, E-R-R-I-L-L. I am the Montana Army National Guard Construction and Facilities Management Officer, or CFMO. I am briefing today on behalf of Brigadier General Don Emerson. I am here in support of the executive budget for military affairs and will present information on the Army program, which consists of the following functional areas: construction and facilities management, environmental, electronic and physical security, anti-terrorism and force protection, network and telephonic communications, and weapons ranges and training lands. These functions directly support the Montana Army National Guard's state and federal missions by building and maintaining world-class facilities, ranges, and training areas, and by providing security, force protection, and communications to all soldiers and civilian employees within our organization. These are all federally funded programs to one degree or another, and only the CFMO requires direct support from the State General Fund. I will focus the remainder of my testimony on this topic. The CFMO's mission is to plan, construct, and maintain real property facilities, manage environmental programs, and execute state and federal fiscal resources in support of the Montana Army National Guard's state and federal missions. We accomplish this by sustaining and recapitalizing our facilities and training lands. Sustainment focuses on keeping our assets operational through preventative maintenance and repair. Recapitalization efforts include restoration, modernization, or replacement of facilities or their structural components to extend or restore the lifespan of those assets. We currently manage 2 million square feet of facilities within 22 readiness centers, 9 maintenance shops, 8 recruiting offices, and 1 maneuver training center, totaling 33,000 acres of federal, state, and private lands. Over the past 6 years, our annual budget averages approximately $18 million in federal funds and $1.6 million in state funds, which is approximately a 92% to 8% split, respectively. Moving forward to the next biennium, the Army program is requesting $3.5 million in state general fund support. That translates to approximately $1.7 million in 2022 and $1.7 million in 2023. While this is higher than our six-year running average, it represents only a small increase over our 2021 budget. This state budget request complements an anticipated federal budget of approximately $39 million over the biennium. The preponderance of this state general fund directly supports the sustainment and recapitalization of our 22 readiness centers, previously known as armories, arrayed across 19 communities in Montana. These facilities directly enable soldiers to train and prepare for their state and federal missions and stand ready to support their local communities in times of emergency. The federal state share of readiness centers is typically a 50-50 or 75-25 split. For instance, on page Alpha 370 of the budget analysis, item DP-1206 shows a $30,000 state general fund request to support the future operations and maintenance of the new Malta Readiness Center. This represents a 50% share to coincide with the federal contribution. Without this state support, we simply could not build and maintain this type of modern infrastructure in the field. The remainder of the state general fund we are requesting includes $27,000 in personnel services. Our five full-time equivalent or FTE requests are 100% federally funded. The natural resources manager and environmental compliance specialist positions will enable our environmental office to more effectively manage our training lands and comply with federal and state environmental laws and regulations. The two grounds maintenance positions will work exclusively on federal facilities and federal property to ensure the longevity and good working order of those assets. Finally, we are requesting a modified to permanent FTE for our contracting bureau chief position. This FTE manages all CFMO contracts, ranging from construction to maintenance to services such as lawn mowing and snow removal. Again, all of these FTEs are 100% federally funded. Finally, I want to say thank you for your continued support of the Montana Army National Guard and the programs that support our soldiers and employees working every day for our state and nation. Pending your questions, this concludes my statement, and I will be followed by the Air Guard program. Thank you.
Colonel Verrill, we have met in Malta there. Thank you very much for that beautiful facility. One question I have, and maybe I hope, yeah, I know you can give me the answer, but how many of our Montana and National Guard are now in D.C.? Do you know the number there?
Sir, this is Colonel Verrill. I'm going to defer answering that question maybe to General Ronick or General Wilkins. I don't believe I'm the best person to answer that question, sir.
General Ronick.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. What was the committee member to ask the question so I can address it?
Senator him? Lang.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lane. Yes, I'll answer that. We have approximately 100, just over 150 soldiers on the ground in three task force, military police, general security presence, and also we're supporting the Saberni efforts, chemical and biological forces. We've also used our airlift to transport those forces. So basically on federal orders to support the National Capital Region, just over about 220 people in support of this operation that came up. So late notice, they're probably defending support of our Constitution and a peaceful transfer of power. So we do thank you for support in that operation.
Thank you. Thank you, General.
Okay. Ms. Nelson, do you have anything to say on the Army National Guard program?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I don't have any additional comments, but I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you. We'll now move on to the Air National Guard program. Ms. Wilkinson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are on page A371 in your workbooks. I'll share my screen with you. This is the Air National Guard program. You see here that the biennium change for between the two biennia is mainly focused in personnel services. There's almost $700,000 included in there. And I'm going to have you go down then to the personnel services discussion on page A372 of your workbooks. I discussed this when we did the program summary. The Air National Guard program has a number of firefighters that work 24-hour shifts, and that's due to the nature of firefighting, that they are providing fire protection. They provide for the Montana Air National Guard. They work overtime, which is above the 2,080 hours that we have for most employees. Anything above that 2,080 hours is removed from the personal services budgets that you consider. And so as part of that, that is why, and I pointed this out to you already in the summary of personal services, but I'm going to show you on page A374 of your workbooks, you see that there is a large reduction of about $400,000 each fiscal year in personal services for this division. That is related to the overtime. And so there is a reduction in DP1. And then if you look down at DP1302, it is fire salaries, federal authority. There is about $500,000 or a little bit over that requested each year of the biennium. That is to reinstate those costs that are in, for overtime that were not included in the budget. And so if you net those, negative DP, it's statewide present law adjustment one, with the overtime that's requested in DP1302, that is the total cost that you're going to be seeing in those personal services requests. In addition to that, the agency is requesting additional firefighter pay to bring the firefighters up to what is being paid by the other fire departments in Montana. They've done a salary survey and looked at why they're having trouble keeping their staff, and they have identified that this is one of the issues. I'm sure the agency will be talking about that in more detail. And then finally, you have on page A375 a request for additional federal authority. It's 100% federally funded, related to a lease for the 120th Airlift Mission. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my brief overview of this budget, and I would be happy to answer any questions should you have them.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee for Ms. Wilkinson?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wilkinson?
Senator Flowers.
I'm trying to make sense of the overtime combination that's reflected in the DP1 and DP 1302. What I don't understand is why does it show up as a negative in DP1?
Because as part of the budget procedures that we've all agreed on for personal services, overtime is over above any 2,080 hours is not specifically included in the request for the next year. That is something that for this agency, they have you look at it each time. They kind of zero out that overtime, and then it is reinstated through a request to show, okay, this is how much overtime we're going to need this time.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Follow up.
Just to say it back to you to make sure I understand it then. Thank you. So the fact is they spent in overtime $418,491 in the base year, and so that has to be deducted out because that was the overtime expenditure, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's basically correct. There's some changes in expected services, or the increases for the pay plan and the changes in benefits right. are slightly offsetting that, but that's the general concept, yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go to the agency presentation, Lieutenant Colonel Fechter.
Good morning, Chairman Bartel and members of the Appropriations Subcommittee. I am Lieutenant Colonel Ken Fechter, F as in Foxtrot, E-C-H-T-E-R. I am the Civil Engineering Squadron Commander for the Montana Air National Guard, 120th Airlift Wing in Great Falls, Montana. Next slide, please. I am here in support of the executive budget for the state entities residing at the 120th Airlift Wing. These entities include fire protection services, facilities craftsmen, real property, environmental, and budget analysis, 45 total. The aforementioned entities support fire protection services for the 120th Airlift Wing flying mission and its associated facilities, fire protection services for the Great Falls International Airport, and finally, mutual aid for Great Falls and surrounding communities. The firefighters are all 100% federally funded. Our craftsmen, our facilities craftsmen provide electrical, structural, plumbing, HVAC, fire alarm, and roads ground support for the facilities at the wing. Our craftsmen are all 75% federal and 25% state funded. Our real property employee works directly with the National Guard Bureau, providing them with current facility statuses, maintaining real property records, and updating on required work due to facility degradation. Our real property technician is 100% federally funded. Our environmental manager ensures the wing meets state and federal environmental standards and trains wing members on environmental stewardship. He is 75-25 also. Our two budget analysts support budgetary needs for all state-run operations at the wing, as well as coordinating the planning and execution of the security appendix, which helps provide for additional security resources at the wing. They ensure proper funds execution, develop budgets for out years, and pay all bills in relation to state employee-driven expenses. Our lead budget analyst is 100% federally funded, and our second is 75% federally funded and 25% state funded. Next slide, please. The air component of DMA brings in approximately $6 million a year to Montana, with about 92% being federal funds and only 8% being state of Montana funds. I've included a next slide, if we could go to the accomplishment slide, please. I brought this slide just to show the additional work that our fire department here at the wing does. We did 92 mutual aids in 2020 to the Great Falls and surrounding areas. In addition to, we covered the requirement when the Gore Hill Volunteer Fire Department went down with COVID, we covered all their areas of responsibility in 2020. Subject to your question, this concludes my testimony. I'd like to introduce Mrs. Delilah Bruno with Disaster and Emergency Services as the next briefer if there are no questions.
Thank you, Colonel Fechter. Any questions from the committee? Colonel, I'd just like to ask you on DP 1303. Can you kind of just fill us in, the committee in, on your drop zone and what its intent is?
Yes, I can. And that's right now, 1303 is a little bit of a bookmark. We are still in the process of negotiating with the family. In fact, the family just brought their easement proposal in yesterday. We forwarded that to National Guard Bureau, and that will be moving forward with National Guard Bureau, Real Property, and AFCEC will be negotiating with the family for that easement agreement. What it provides us is the ability to train the aircraft, the C-130s. We don't have a drop zone in the state presently where we can drop in a four-ship formation, which is a requirement and a training need that the pilots require. They'll be able to do that with it. Also, Fort Benton is within an hour of the Montana Air National Guard full retrieval of the drops that we do. It's a lot closer and safer travel for our 2T, which are our recovery team that go out and pick up the drops. Right now, Limestone Hills is one of our drop locations, and that's a good 2 hours, and during the winter months is a pretty dangerous drive for our retrieval teams. Additionally, we have a drop zone out of Malmstrom Air Force Base, but we compete continuously with the helicopter work that they're doing out there, as well as day-to-day operations, and it's quite a coordination effort. So this street drop zone enhances our ability to train to a great effect and makes it a lot safer for the recovery of the drops.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is General Ronick, if I may add, please.
General Ronick, yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been in this counterinsurgency war for the last 20 years, but now with our national defense strategy, we're now needed to train to a higher level against near-peer adversaries and also bring in efficiencies as we train. Again, this capability brings it near where we can train our at a higher level and also be more efficient in getting to that drop zone and back and recovering those type of things. This funding that we're asking for will be matched federally, basically on a 4-to-1 type ratio that we work with Guard Bureau on. So this is important that we get this facility and to do that. So both in our Army and our Air programs that we try to train to the next level in alignment with the National Defense Strategy is very important. Not only when we will train to a higher level, we become very attractive to other states and other places to come into our state to train and bring those resources there. So not only are we training to a higher level, we're bringing assets in here that could train to that higher level too. So this is a very important proposal for us as we get into it. It's not fully developed as we work with Guard Bureau, but we'll need to place this in the next biennium to have that in place to do this. So we appreciate your support as we train to the next level with our that keeps our missions that we have not only in place, but also helps us look at new opportunities for future missions also. Closes my comments on that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Ms. Nelson, any comments on the Air National Guard program?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I do not have anything to add, but I'm available for questions.
Okay, that closes out the Air National Guard program presentation. We'll go to Disaster and Emergency Services Program. Ms. Wilkinson.
Members of the committee, you are now on page A376. Of the Disaster and Emergency Services Workbook. And I will share my screen with you. Sorry about that. There you go. This shows you again the biennial change in the November the 15th budget. It's about 3%. About a third of it is coming from general fund and the remainder of it is in federal funds. And I'm going to have you once again look at the actuals and the budgeted as shown on 377. So here you see for the operating expenses, they were provided about $1.3 million and they expended about $600,000 of that, or just about half of it. In fiscal year 2020 for transfers, you see that they received about $1.6 million. They spent about a half $1 million. And from there on page A378, there is a conversation about perhaps looking at the way that this agency is budgeted. I've provided you in two figures. Figure four shows operating expenses, the budgeted amount and the expended amounts in fiscal year 2014. And you see that there has been a growing amount of operating expenses that have been remaining, culminating in fiscal year 2020 with about $700,000 remaining of the $1.2 million that they were provided. In figure five, you see that a very similar trend in relation to transfers. $3 million budgeted in 14, only 700 expended, leaving a budget remaining of 2.2. When you look at fiscal year 2020, they did reduce the amount of transfers in the budget request, but still of 1.5, they only expended 555,000, leaving about $1 million remaining. Now, as we generally do in our office, and I'm now on page A through 79, I have spoken with the agency and had a conversation with them about what is going on here. And part of their challenge is that they receive federal grants in one fiscal year, and they have to expend those over multiple fiscal years. The majority of what they're using that for is grants authority. And so they would request for your consideration that if you want to reduce operating expenses, they would recommend that you reduce them by about $300,000. And in addition, to reduce transfers by about $1 million. But they would request respectfully that you would then take that appropriation authority, and rather totally reducing their funds, that you increase the grant authority that they would have, as that's where they would be receiving those funds. So your options here are to realign the appropriations in the Disaster Emergency Services Division to meet what they're projecting they're going to need in the expenditure categories, or to adopt the current budget proposal. From there, I'm going to have you go down to the funding, and this discussion begins on 380. Here you see the funding table, and there are a number of state special revenue funds on that page. The SAR stands for Search and Rescue. And so you have Search and Rescue, Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. That's that first abbreviation of about $139,000 over the biennium. And then you have Search and Rescue, Disaster and Emergency Services, Off-Road Vehicles included in there. From there, you have a legislative issue that I'm bringing forth to you that you may wish to consider expanding the uses of the search and rescue funds due to an accumulating fund balance. And so if you go look on page A382, you see, and I guess I should provide it, and I apologize, it was hard to fit all of this on one page, so it looks a little crowded there. There are three different revenue sources that provide funding for the search and rescue funds. Two are recorded within the Department of Military Affairs. One is recorded within the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And between the three of them, there's about $1.5 million that is available in fund balance that is not being spent. So statute requires that 0.04% of motor vehicle revenue goes into the general fund go into a state special account for search and rescue activities, and then 25 cents of each wildlife conservation license, and that is termed a search and rescue surcharge. So it's not considered a conservation license, but a surcharge on top of that for search and rescue activities that are to be deposited into a state special revenue account. That is deposited into a Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks state special revenue account. And when the Department of Military Affairs has search and rescue items that come up, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks transfers the money to them. Now, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has a statute that says that funding can only be used for individuals who have been lost and they are searched for if they are hunting, fishing, or trapping. That significantly limits the amount of funding that the search and rescue organizations can be provided. And most of the search and rescue operations are funded through your local counties. So there's about $1.5 million available for the search and rescue missions, and it is not getting paid out because of this limitation. Now, in discussions with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, they maintain that there are federal requirements that say you can't use this funding for anything but the restrictions that they have in their statute. I would propose, if you are interested in expanding the uses of the search and rescue funds so that the counties have more funds available to them, We would get a legal opinion on whether that surcharge is actually considered hunting and fishing licenses that are restricted under federal requirements or not. There's information for you in these two charts. Here you see the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks account with the $1.4 million where the majority of the funding is located. The reimbursement in fiscal year 2020 to the local sheriff's departments is shown here in transfers out in figure six. So you see that there was about $50,000 in 2012 that went out, that left out of the total funding about $600,000 in the fund balance. That has continued to grow until you're at $1.4 million in 2020 and about $11,000 paid out to the local sheriffs for search and rescue activities. In addition, you see figure seven. This shows what the funding allocation would be of those funds if it was distributed to the local search and rescue operations. The first year in fiscal year 12 shows the distribution of the $500,000 in fund balance, and then what it would be to the county or available to the counties for reimbursement for search and rescue, which is your first item. The funding is also available for equipment purchases for search and rescue organizations. For example, if they have to go out in the winter, they may need snowmobiles, that type of thing. Some of the money is available for training the officers, and then a small amount is available for administration. So your option here is to determine whether you want to expand the uses of those search and rescue missions to include recreationalists. That would mean if you had someone hiking that got lost, the search and rescue operations for those could be expanded. Should that be the committee's wish, I would recommend that we get a legal opinion, because I'm not an attorney, as I think you're all aware, on whether or not those funds would impede the federal funds for that we received. They were generally referred to as Pittman-Roberts funding. Mr. Chairman, those are the two issues that I had in this agency. From there, you see that they have been requested mainly statewide present law adjustments, and they are requesting some new additional FTE. There's two included in the new proposals that they will be discussing with you. And then there is a request for additional federal funds for mitigation plans. Those require a 25% match of general fund, and those are included on the charts that you have on page A384 of your workbooks. Mr. Chairman, I will stop sharing my screen, and I'm available for questions.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wilkinson, in focusing on that last issue related to the search and rescue growing fund balance, would it also be, would two other options be to statutorily increase the amount that we can allocate per search and rescue unit, which is currently limited to 6,000. We could increase that, correct, as an alternative?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you can request that the House, and I should have made this clear, yes, you could request a bill to expand the reimbursement. It is limited to $6,000 per mission, no matter how many units you have involved in the search. So that would also help. You are correct, Senator Flowers, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And follow-up?
Follow-up.
Ms. Wilkinson, would also another alternative be to reduce the amount that we collect off of a conservation license in order to reduce that? And if that's also an option, would it be possible to do an assessment of the fund balance to determine how much we could increase the search and rescue charge per unit or reduce the conservation license amount in order to stabilize that fund balance so it's not showing an ongoing increase?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we can certainly do that, and you are correct. The other option, and I should have included both of those in your options, would be to reduce the conservation license surcharge. And I can get to do that analysis. It'll probably be next week before that gets completed.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Mr. Chair, just one final comment, if I can offer it.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Ms. Wilkinson, or I know Ms. Wilkinson mentioned or suggested that we seek a legal opinion on this. I think possibly in addition to that, we should go to our federal partners and ask them whether this would violate our kind of funding agreement through the Pittman-Robertson funds and get their opinion on whether we could divert some of these funds to other search and rescue activities without violating the terms of our agreement for those funds, because I would rather resolve that via an understanding with our federal partners rather than through taking the action and then finding ourselves in a lawsuit. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Senator Flowers. Representative Cheetah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Wilkinson. Mr. Chair, Ms. Wilkinson, just to clarify, I think Senator Flowers used a term or was describing these as part of the Pittman-Robertson dollars. I believe you said earlier that this was just a surcharge, a 25-cent surcharge on Montana conservation licenses. Is that correct, or did I misunderstand that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cheetah, that is what the statute calls it. However, the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks believes that this may impair their Pittman-Roberts, which is why I believe Senator Flowers' suggestion is probably a very good one, to clarify that immediately. Whether or not it is truly a surcharge, I believe that, I personally believe that that's why it's defined in statute that way, but I believe that, we should have that clarified with it, so that we do not endanger any Pittman-Roberts funding, Mr. Chairman.
Comment, Mr. Chair. I think the suggestion by the senator is good, and I think checking into that is valid. It just seems to me that since Pittman-Robertson dollars aren't derived from licenses, it raised that question, so it would be worth clarifying. I have a hunch that it doesn't, but again, just as you mentioned, Ms. Wilkinson, I'm not an attorney either, so it'd be good to have that clarified.
Senator Flowers, could you follow up on this issue?
I will. Mr. Chairman, I will follow all the suggestions and get you the information on the impact on the fund balance from the two separate items, increasing the amount of the search and rescue reimbursements.
Okay.
And looking at reducing conservation licenses and also finding, talking to the federal partners.
Sure. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We will now hear from Ms. Bruno from the Division Administrator for the DES.
Good afternoon. Just making sure everybody can hear me. Yep. Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Delilah Bruno, D-E-L-I-L-A, Bruno, B-R-U-N-O, and I am the Administrator for the Disaster and Emergency Services Division at the Department of Military Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Make sure my slides work.
Tap the screen again. Make sure it's working the screen. And try again.
Okay. So in 2019, just a couple years ago, we dove into, you know, the fundamentals, the purpose of our division as a part of a strategic planning process that engaged our entire team as well as input from local disaster and emergency services coordinators. While not comprehensive, the items listed on this slide summarize the essence of our program. We ensure we are prepared to deal with Montana's disasters in a timely manner and to preserve the lives of Montanans. Our mission reflects the various disaster phases our staff engages in to ensure our program is well-rounded. We're here to lead a comprehensive emergency management program to prepare for, respond to, recover from, and mitigate disasters. This slide briefly describes each phase of our emergency management, which are the fundamentals, again, of our mission. First, we have our response efforts. Traditionally, we have an on-call duty officer available 24/7 who's ready to coordinate support for local jurisdictions when an emergency or disaster occurs. We may provide support through equipment and supplies or personnel, which may include the National Guard or often technical assistance just to help coordinate resources. If needed, we internally reassign staff from within DES to work in our state emergency coordination center. Next is the recovery process. Our team works with communities impacted by disasters to help restore services to a pre-disaster condition. Certain activities performed by local governments can be reimbursed through state or federal programs based on the severity and the type of damages. Arguably, the most critical component of our program is mitigation. Our mitigation staff work with cities, counties, and tribes to reduce the impacts disasters have on communities before it occurs. Communities are very aware of the threats and vulnerabilities in their area. We help locals access federal funding to identify projects and strengthen infrastructure that may otherwise be damaged as a result of a natural disaster. Simply put, mitigation reduces or even eliminates the need for costly disaster repairs. And finally, we have preparedness. Preparedness is cross-cutting, and it encompasses all of the planning and permitting, risk assessments, MOUs, training, and different validation that is so critical to have an effective response, recovery, and mitigation strategy. So like many have experienced, the past year has been very busy for us. Prior to the pandemic, we wrapped up our 5-year strategic plan. In addition to our staff engagement, I'm most proud of the workshops and interactive meetings with county DES coordinators to identify our strengths, our weaknesses, our opportunities, and our threats so we can much better serve the needs of our communities and our state. Much of that work, however, was put on hold so we could support community response needs brought on by the pandemic. Hospitals required additional staffing so they could continue to provide quality care, and more beds were needed to address a surge in cases that last peaked in November. Since the beginning of the pandemic, over 300 contracted medical staff have been engaged to help hospitals. This is in addition to 68 federal healthcare workers from HHS, 47 RN students working as CNAs, 11 EMTs, and 11 civilian nurses. An additional 52 contact tracers were hired to assist local public health. There were numerous requests for other resources, over 1,000 requests for PPE alone. In addition to helping ship supplies, the National Guard has performed exceptionally well, engaging in versatile tasks, which included everything from assisting with outbreaks in nursing homes and hospitals, providing support to the Montana State Prison, and helping support state public health lab and our warehouse operations. All of the efforts I've mentioned were processed through our State Emergency Coordination Center, based on a resource request from an area that expressed the need for help. Our program is funded with a significant support from federal grants. Federal disaster assistance and mitigation projects are matched 3-to-1. The general fund that we're requesting in House Bill 2 today is matched 50-50 by a FEMA grant and is the funding source that helps pay for our salaries and operational costs. A large part of our function is to administer funds from FEMA to local jurisdictions. Looking back at the past 6 years, about $65 million has been administered to counties and tribes for disaster assistance, mitigation programs, and preparedness efforts. We do have two new proposals in the executive budget, both of which are tied to our strategic plan with the intent of reducing the burden on local governments and creating efficiencies. First, we're asking for the non-federal cost share to develop 3 regional hazard mitigation plans. In order to be eligible for federal mitigation funding, each county must have a current multi-hazard mitigation plan that must be updated every 5 years. The process for counties to update these plans is time-consuming and expensive. Plan updates generally take between 1.5 and 2 years to complete and cost counties and tribes approximately $35,000 each. There are currently 28 counties and 5 tribes with expired plans. This means it would cost about $1 million to get plans current across the state. Fortunately, there's mitigation funding available through FEMA grants that can assist with 75% of this cost. Our proposal is to request the non-federal cost share to develop 3 regional plans that will not only bring the expired plans into compliance, but also extend the current plans for another 5 years. By regionalizing these efforts, the cost of each plan would be reduced to roughly $5,450 per jurisdiction. The remaining funding we are requesting will update the state-level mitigation plan in 2023. Our second proposal is for 2 FTE to assist with mitigation. We currently have 3 staff dedicated to work with cities, counties, and tribes to reduce the impact a disaster may have on a community before it occurs. The plans mentioned in the previous proposal are the documents community use to identify threats and vulnerabilities in their area. Again, we help locals access federal funding and develop projects that strengthen the infrastructure that may otherwise be damaged as a result of a natural disaster. The overall intent is to reduce the cost of repairs post-disaster. We continue to see additional federal funding set aside to build resilient infrastructure in communities. Last year, over $500 million was available nationally. When working through our strategic plan with our county coordinators, we repeatedly learned that a key limiting factor for counties to participate was a lack of time to work on large project applications. 2 FTE at the state level could provide a lot of support to local jurisdictions and help us achieve our vision to build a disaster resilient state. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, I want to thank you for your time and the opportunity to be here to speak with you today. I'm happy to answer any questions when they arise. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bruno. Any questions from the committee? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Ms. Bruno. In your mitigation emergency managers that you're talking about, what would be the work plan for them throughout the state? How would they determine who they're going to work with?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, thank you very much for that question. So the way that the local emergency managers, or I'm sorry, the way that the emergency managers at DES, the way our work plan said, is really driven by what the counties want. So inside these local hazard mitigation plans, all of the local jurisdictions identify what their top priorities are, what projects they want to work on, and we simply become an outreach effort to them. Hopefully that answers your question. It basically, if they come to us and want our help, we provide that assistance.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
I guess I'm, as you probably, well, you probably don't know, but I'm very sympathetic to the rural areas of eastern Montana, and I would hope that there'd be some kind of a plan from your agency to engage those counties out there to ask for your services rather than put them all in one general area of the state. Spread the workload throughout the state, cover the whole state over a period of time.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you very much. That is exactly one of the benefits and one of the things that we heard over and over when we were out talking with our counties. Some of the jurisdictions that have a bigger population, you know, they have more staff. They've got more FTE to do these projects on their own. It really is our rural communities who have a quarter time, maybe a half time local DES coordinator. They don't have the hours in the day to commit to this. So we do see them getting left out. And so it would be of great value to our rural communities to have employees like this at the state level that could engage directly with these communities, especially our rural communities.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Another thing that happens there is the rural communities are really open door to a lot of that. That's where a lot of our outdoor recreation is. I know in Chairman Bartel's area, the recreation that goes along the Missouri River there, and the people that need emergency services don't seem to be paid back to anybody. But so we are very vulnerable from not getting paid back, but we have a lot of recreation to partake in.
Representative Paragoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bruno. Mr. Chair, Ms. Bruno, I'm assuming with the government-to-government aspects that the tribes are contacted so that they know that, number one, their plans are expired and that the agency is available to provide the assistance through their DES.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. We work very closely with the tribal nations, and absolutely we have contact with them so they know what they need to do to and how we can help them get back in compliance if they have an expired plan, for example. We want only the best for everybody across the state of Montana, and that means reaching out to our counties and our tribal partners as well.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Ms. Bruno, Mr. Chair. The other thing is that you have mentioned that there would be a regional plan, and that that's promising, because sometimes I have had the experience that at the tribal level, when you have especially new folks that are coming in, having taking over a position, sometimes they're not really sure what to do. So is the intent of the regional plans to be used as a template to where then the tribal plans would be coordinated with that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that's exactly. So we would work with a contractor that would help us regionalize these three plans. The components of the plan would still have specific threats and vulnerabilities and strategies on how to move ahead by each jurisdiction, by each county, by each tribe. Therefore, if there was a new coordinator that were to assume the position of a local DES coordinator in a tribal area or a county, they're going to see that map laid out of what their threats, vulnerabilities, and strategies have been identified. So they've got a kind of a starting point and a roadmap as they move ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Bruno.
Ms. Bruno, search and rescue incidents only, not funding. Have they increased over the years or decreased?
Mr. Chair, I'd say they've increased. All the points that were brought up today by Ms. Wilkinson, you know, she did a very nice job of laying out some of the challenges with those funds. I will say, as we engage with search and rescue organizations across the state, the desire is out there for changes to some of our statutes, to some of our rules, maybe our funding levels, so that we can get more of these funds out to the local communities who are paying into this. So I think she did a very nice job laying that out. Search and rescue, the demand for that's definitely not going down, and I'm glad that the committee's taking a look at it.
Thank you. Ms. Bruno, could you provide some information to the committee? So I'd like to see what the search and rescue incidents count was as a state, and then could you please break it down into counties, which counties that those search and rescue operations functioned in, and then for the last 3 years, please?
I'd be happy to, sir, yes.
Any other questions for the committee? For Ms. Bruno. Okay, thank you, Ms. Bruno.
Thank you.
Ms. Nelson, do you have anything to add for the DES?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, but I would like to maybe mention that as we get that information, that we may want to loop in FWP since it's part of their budget.
Thank you. We'll take a 5-minute break. Thank you. Then we'll come back and listen to the Veterans Affairs Program. Back to order. We will now hear the Veterans Affairs Program, and Ms. Wilkinson will walk us through the workbook.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are on page 8386 of your workbooks. This, as you said, is the Veterans Affairs Program. You see on the first page the biennial comparison with the request in the November the 15th budget of about $1 million increase. I want to point out to you on this first page that there is a significant amount of state special revenue proposed in the biennial, and I'm going to focus my remarks on that state special revenue. If you go down to the funding table, which is provided on page A389, you see the state special revenue broken out into three accounts. One is patriotic license plates. The next is Veterans Affairs, with reference to the bill that passed it a number of years ago, and then the Purple Heart and Higher Scholarships. We have an LFD issue for your consideration for each of these state special revenue accounts. Now, the first one talks about the Veterans Services account, and it shows that at November 15th, the budget is over-appropriated, meaning that the expenditures that are proposed are higher than the revenues coming in. I would let you know that that has been corrected in the two final versions of the budget, and so I'm not going to be discussing that with you. I am, however, going to be discussing the patriotic license plate fee account. That discussion begins on the bottom of page A390 and then continues on to page 391, which is where I'm going to start the conversation. You see there figure 9. And it shows you the revenues as included in the budgeting system by the agency, and then what they are proposing as part of their budget for this particular account. These funds come specifically from patriotic license plates. Those revenues are deposited into the state special revenue account. And you see that beginning in fiscal year 2021, the amount provided in the revenues about $72,000, but there's budgets of about $200,000. Now, that is more than the revenue coming in, and more than the revenue coming in and the fund balance, because sometimes the agency is allowed to use the fund balance. It shows here that it is over-appropriated by $70,000 in the beginning of 2021. Or the end of 2021. An agency cannot spend more money than they have. So this will zero out because they can't spend it. The reason I'm pointing this out to you is that that difference between the $70,000 in revenues and the request that's going in the budget of $200,000 goes on in 2 years. You have it in 2022 and 2023. So you may want to have a conversation with the agency about what they're anticipating in terms of what the actual spending out of that account's going to be, or consider reducing the budget for operating expenses by about $128,000, or adopt a proposal and allow the agency to determine how they're going to reduce spending should the revenues not come in. That's the first of two revenue accounts that I want to talk to you about. The next one is the one related to the Purple Heart Scholarships, which was new last biennium. So last biennium, the legislature enacted House Bill 158. It provided, as I said in my earlier remarks, for scholarships for veterans who have received a Purple Heart or a higher medal as part of their service to our country. In the first year of the biennium, 2020, there was a biennial appropriation from the general fund transferred into the state special revenue account of $50,000. And that was the only funding provided. Now, in fiscal year 2020, there was not any request for those funds. And so the entire $50,000 rolled into fiscal year 2021. When I wrote this at the end of November, there still had not been any requests. So that $50,000 is still there. But the legislation required that the $50,000 become part of the base budget going forward. So in fiscal year 2022, There is in the base budget $50,000 for Purple Heart scholarships. And in fiscal year 2023, there is no funding source for that. There is no more general fund transferred to provide additional funds to the state special revenue account. And should the agency utilize all $50,000 in 2021, as they have the authority to do, you will be providing an appropriation with no funding source. So I wanted to point that out to you. So you have some options. Discuss the usage that they're anticipating in the current biennium and next biennium, 2023, and establish the appropriations at that level, or adopt the proposed level of appropriations as presented in the budget. There, I want to also point out to you, in the November the 15th budget, there are two decision packages, 3101 and 3102. Those have both been removed from the December the 15th budget and are not included in the January 7th budget. Those were the two proposals that were driving that other fund balance negative, and that is no longer an issue because they have been removed. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks regarding the November 15th budget for this program.
Thank you.
I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Any questions for Ms. Wilkinson on the Veterans Affairs Program? Senator Lang.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Wilkinson, recollection is, did this committee take $100,000 out of the patriotic licenses and move it over to maintenance of the fleet that's used to take the veterans to the hospitals in that last session?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang, that sounds familiar, but I would defer that question to the agency, if that would be acceptable, Mr. Chairman, or to
yes.
OPPP.
Ms. Nelson?
Further research, whichever you would prefer.
Well, I think we need to look at that. At that time, there was a need to transport those veterans to the hospital, and there was we couldn't get the military affairs to fund that, so we took it out of the license plate, and now we got a problem in license plate, which I was told at that time that would create, so I'm just wondering if there's some way to get around this. Please research it and get back to me, Ms. Wilkinson.
I would be happy to. The reason I'm hesitating is somehow I remember that happening in the committee I was in. So that wasn't last biennium. I think it might have been the biennium before that.
Probably was. Yeah. Okay.
I would need to clarify.
Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Okay, now we'll hear from Ms. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, did you want to hear from the agency first?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Ms. Kelly Ackerman. I had you in my head, Ms. Nelson, to answer Senator Lang's question. I don't see Mr. Ackerman.
Miss
Ackerman.
Chris, you're muted.
Mr. Chairman, I can see that they're working on getting Miss Ackerman ready to talk. So I think we just need to give them a minute.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, while you're waiting, I do have an answer to Senator Lang's question, if you would like to hear that now.
Senator Lang is really busy right now, Ms. Wilkinson, but let me see if I can break him away. Senator Lang, would you like your question answered?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Ms. Wilkinson. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in the previous biennium for fiscal year 2018 and 2019, the legislature provided $100,000 for the transportation of veterans. It was a biennial appropriation. They could spend it all on the first year or the second year. It was designated as one time only, so it was removed from the budget at that time. In the next biennium, the biennium 2020 and 2021, the legislature adopted an additional $100,000 from funding from that account. The funding was for the outreach program and funds veteran services offers training, field operations, and services maintenance, upkeep functionality, and leasing expenses. And so that is the additional funding that seems to be driving that account somewhat negative, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Fix it, Mr. Chairman.
Our slides are almost up here. Getting them ready here. Okay, Kelly, we are up.
He always talks at his shoe.
Ms. Ackerman, if you can't get your slide going, you could do a verbal presentation. That would be fine.
All right. Mr. Chairman, committee members, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Sorry for the delay. That's Zoom for you. So thank you, committee members, for allowing me the opportunity to come and speak. My name, for the record, is Kelly Ackerman. It's K-E-L-L-Y. Last name is A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N, and I'm the administrator for Montana Veterans Affairs Division. The mission and goal for our agency is to care for the veterans and their families across the state. This mission applies not only to assisting veterans and their family members with federal and state benefit claims applications, but also to honorably serve them in death through a dignified burial at one of our state cemeteries. Montana Veterans Affairs Division is comprised of two primary programs, Veteran Services Program and the Cemetery Program. This slide reflects the Veteran Services Program, comprised of 9 offices and 23 veteran service officers across the state. The caseload is the sum of claims products submitted to the Veterans Administration for adjudication. The financial impact is the money paid to veterans and their family members by the VA as a result of claims that our veteran service officers have developed. In this case, fiscal year 2020, the fiscal impact is more than $257 million. That is paid to Montana veterans and used in their local communities and economies. The cemetery program is comprised of 6 groundskeepers working at 3 Montana State Veteran Cemeteries in Miles City, Fort Harrison, and Missoula. One of our greatest accomplishments that we're very proud of is during the last biennium was a $2.9 million VA expansion grant at the Eastern Montana State Veteran Cemetery in Miles City. This expansion added a committal shelter, memorial wall, columbarium, pre-placed underground crypts, a spoil shelter, and a tremendous amount of landscaping. You can also see on this slide the interment rates for each cemetery over the past 7 years. It is evident how COVID has impacted our interment rate in the last year with reduced numbers. Funding sources for Montana Veterans Affairs Division are a bit convoluted. The majority of funding for Veterans Services Program is through general funds, as well as state special revenue through license plate transfers and patriotic license plate funds. Our Veterans Cemeteries Program does not receive general funds, but rather VA plot allowance, a small amount of license plate transfer monies in the form of state special revenue, and a small amount of donations. Looking back at the budget for the cemetery program over the past 10 years shows higher expenses than revenue each year. A very large private donation augmented the budget for almost 10 years. However, it was expended in 2018. All funding sources are fluid, except for general funds, which is why our cemetery would like to reconcile this disparity in order to remain sustainable. One of our new proposals is House Bill 87, which would reallocate revenue from the license plate transfer based on MCA 15-122. The reallocation would increase cemetery revenue by roughly 6% while decreasing veteran services revenue by roughly 1%, or $45,000 to $50,000. The argument has been raised that this reallocation would take money away from veterans. I would argue that it depends on which veterans you're referring to. It is as important to honor our fallen heroes at the time of burial as it is to assist in applying for benefits while still living. At the end of the day, we are still helping veterans in both programs. I think the last slide just reflects our only other new proposals, which was increased spending authority for Senate Bill 401 and for the patriotic license plates. Mr. Chairman, barring any questions from the committee, that concludes my presentation, and I'll be available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ackerman. Any questions from the committee? If there's no questions then. Ms. Nelson, do you have anything to add to the Veterans Affairs Program?
Mr. Chair, I don't have anything to add, but I'm available if there are any questions.
Okay, that'll conclude our Veterans Affairs Program. I didn't hear you. Who does? Oh, the general? He didn't have his hand up. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing our presenter and our administrators for our diverse programs in the Department of Military Affairs. So I conclude our presentations, but still open to any questions you may have for me or any of my directors for this presentation. But thank you for your time today.
Thank you, General Roenick. Is there any public comment for the Department of Military Affairs? Public comment.
Mr. Chair, I do have Sarah Piper with her hand raised.
Ms. Piper.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Are you able to hear me today?
Yes.
Wonderful. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Sarah Piper. For the record, that is S-A-R-A-H-P-I-P-E-R. And I represent the Montana Federation of Public Employees, MFPE. I want to say, first of all, that it was wonderful to sit through this today and hear all of the important work being done by the entire department, though I am here today on behalf of our members who work at the Montana Youth Challenge Academy. We are a proponent of the governor's recommended House Bill 2 funding levels for this program. Montana Youth Challenge employees perform an incredible feat. They take teens who are at high risk and truly guide them to turn their lives around. On a personal note, as a former high school teacher, I have seen up close the impact that these counselors, instructors, and team leaders have on teenagers that were really in dangerous spots prior to being accepted into the academy. When they would come back and visit at my school afterwards, it was wonderful to see the changes that had taken place in them. The budget under your consideration will allow the Montana Youth Challenge Academy to achieve its purpose on behalf of taxpayers. And we would ask you, though, to consider decreasing the proposed level of vacancy savings. Montana's budget will balance without forcing Montana Youth Challenge to hold vacant positions and trim services to at-risk teens. At a time when major budget cuts are being proposed and with a strong ending fund balance, Montana has the resources to fully fund the important public services that the legislature authorizes. So we advocate for the full funding of Montana Youth Challenge Academy so that it continue its outstanding work and ask your support of this legislation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Piper. Any other public comment? If there's no other public comment, this concludes the hearing on the Department of Military Affairs, and I thank you for everyone today.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Did you want me to go over the differences in the budget between the November the 7th and the final budget that you received?
Yes, I just figured I'd get done with public comment, and then if the individuals from Military Affairs wanted to had something else to do, they could go ahead and go on, and then you could explain the budget change to the committee. Okay?
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Okay. So committee will be just a few more minutes. This will be on our buff pages, if you want to look at those. Ms. Wilkinson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try something a little bit different. You have the narrative, so all the writing that we do, but we also have this tool out on the website that is the House Bill 2.
Ms. Wilkinson, will you just give us 1 second, please?
Yes. Representative Cheetah, your buff-colored pages ended up being white. I apologize if that's what you're looking for.
Okay. Chris, or Ms. Wilkinson, show us where you get to that chart again that you're showing us on screen.
You bet. Let me close this all out. And so we're going to close out even past this. And here you see that when you go on that first thing that says all things fiscal, and it takes you to this page, rather than go up here, which is what we've been using for the budget committee information, you see the state rotunda picture, and under that, budget analysis and fiscal reports. If you click on that, and you click on the next thing that says budget analysis and fiscal reports, it will bring you to House Bill 2 budget comparison, 2003 Governor Gianforte's budget. And that is where I'm going to start. On the right here, you see that there are buttons. This first chart that always shows up is the biennium comparison, but I'm going down to the bottom that says version comparison. And so I'm clicking there. I hope you see that screen. This shows the entire budget. And I'm going to just go into the Department of Military Affairs. Here you see the changes between the starting budget and the new budget. And I wanted to point out one here. And the other ones are very small, and they're included in your budget analysis. There are three main things in every program that has general fund. There are, in every program has a vacancy savings of 4%, and in your buff colored pages, it tells what those differences are. Every program has that has general fund has a reduction for the contribution to the state share. That's going to be suspended for 2 months. But here you see that there's a rather large change in the veteran services. And so when I click down here, you see that there is DP 19001, That was not included in the November the 15th budget, but it was included in the final December 15th budget that we received. And what that is related to is Initiative 190. It was the initiative that was passed in November that legalized recreational marijuana. And as passed by the voters, it included distribution of some of the funds, the profits, if you will, that are coming into the state through the taxes to veteran services. It was about $2.3 million that was included in the budget. And as you, I believe, are all aware, Governor Gianforte has recommended that that issue be studied more closely. And so as part of the House Bill 2 budget, it is no longer included under the Veterans Affairs Program. That is the largest change that you see between the November the 15th budget, the December the 15th budget, and then the January 7th budget, which is where you're starting from, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to stop sharing the screen now. That, you have the ability here. I will show you one more thing. So you see that on the screen that there's pluses and minuses. So you can go up to each program and it will show you what the changes are. Again, as I said, there's changes in vacancy savings and those are identified. And then there are changes as a result of the state share contribution. Mr. Chairman, that pretty much concludes my remarks on that. Unless you wanted me to go through the buff-colored pages, I anticipated that the committee has seen those so regularly that you are all familiar with what's included in there, and I didn't need to address it again, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wilkinson. Okay. Tomorrow, we will be hearing 8 o'clock in the Department of Revenue. So if there is no other comments, we'll adjourn this meeting. The hearing, excuse me. Thank you.